It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 453. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email questions and suggestions for show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, and you can send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. Don't forget to check out the wiki, mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all the past shows and great show notes and audio where you can go back all the way to show one. Lots of good information. So remember to check that out. That's mtswiki.com. Got a great show planned tonight, and we're using the backup microphone tonight. So if it sounds a little different, I am talking in, actually, it's not a backup microphone, a backup way of tying my microphone into the PC. My mixer, just, it's working, but it's not communicating at all with my PC tonight. So it's difficult to collaborate with some of the other hardware without having the mixer. So it's just the vocals. And I have my Shure microphone connected into my Icicle device, which plugs into a USB port. It's working, and the show must go on. For tonight, I have a few stories from in the trenches, some things I'm working on, and some problems I resolved, and I want to talk about that. I have a job opportunity for someone in the Ohio area. We'll talk about that. Also, when I mean job opportunity, a client that needs some assistance. And I have a stack of email that I want to get to. So before we get started, you want your website to load quicker, and you want to make sure that if your DNS provider goes down, you have a secondary route to your website. That is where dyn.com, dyn.com comes in. With outsourced DNS, you can make sure people can get to your websites at all times. Dyn has service tiers for companies of any size to get started. DYN serves more than 4 million customers around the world. Stop taking chances with uptime and start talking to Dyn about best-in-class managed DNS. To get faster internet by using DYN for DNS, visit dyn.com/podcast30, fill out the contact form, or just start shopping right away and save 30% by using the promo code podcast30 at checkout. Again, visit dyn.com/podcast30. Kate, who is a consultant in Canada and contributes regularly to the Mike Tech Show, and I so greatly appreciate it, and Kate and I have collaborated on problems together, she needs some help. Her dad is in his 80s, and he lives in Perrysburg, Ohio, which is near Toledo. We need a consultant, a technician that can go to him and clean up his seriously infested computer. So if you live in the Perrysburg or service the Perrysburg area in Ohio, please contact me, miketechshow@gmail.com, and I will put you in touch with Kate so you can help him out and this is an opportunity for you to be able to do some good and help clean up a system. He needs a lot of help. Thanks a lot, and hope to hear from someone in that area. I want to talk about some of the consulting jobs that I've been working on this week. One, I got called into a company that has a workstation, and I didn't know until I got on site that it was Windows XP 64-bit. Now, I normally don't run into 64-bit XP. It was infected. Safe mode would not work. When I finally get around the FBI infection, so it was that FBI warning, and you know, their ransomware where they're trying to extract money to let you have the system back, CombiFix does not run in XP 64-bit. But that's okay. RKill stopped the infection for enough time for me to run TDSS Killer, which found some things. And also, I was able to run Malwarebytes, and it found it. On a reboot, it was eliminated. So I got very, very lucky by just being persistent to be able to get to Explorer, to be able to navigate to my USB stick. Once I got to my USB stick, that's it. Game over. I win. And it was a challenge because I first tried to get into safe mode, tried to get into at least a bare prompt. It took me a few minutes, but once I got Malwarebytes running, everything was good. I was prepared to take the hard drive out, attach it separately to my laptop, and do a cleaning that way. I was prepared for the worst. Went in there, then did my cleanup of everything. Interesting, Microsoft Security Essentials does not work under XP 64-bit. As a matter of fact, a lot of antiviruses don't. So it's sort of out there on an island. But I turned it into an opportunity because this client has a couple XP systems, and we had that discussion where XP is going away next April, and to be critical for his business and his operation, this is a CPA firm, they need to plan a migration this summer. So that is very, very important. We are now discussing different options. We're going to make a matrix of all the computers. Which ones can we do an upgrade to Windows 7 or Windows 8? And then which systems just totally have to be replaced? Hopefully, I'll get some more work from this. And that was nice to be able to clean that infection. I had two printer problems I had to work on this week. And you know how I just love printer problems. I was lucky that it wasn't as bad as I thought. I get a call from a home client that just bought a brand new HP OfficeJet Pro 8600. That's actually my favorite OfficeJet Pro. It is a nice model. I've set a bunch of these up. So I'm thinking, well, what's wrong? This thing's pretty straightforward in setting up. Well, they tried to connect with the wireless networking option. And again, you know how I feel about that. Wireless on the printer is something that should be uninvented. Right off the bat, they go down that rabbit hole and they kind of halfway install a driver on a Vista laptop. Now, the driver does work on the Windows 7 laptop, but the Vista laptop is in a state of half a driver installed. They called HP, and after 3 hours, with HP even remoting into the system, they could not fix the problem. So I get the call, and then I was like, well, why didn't you call me right off the bat? Well, trying to save some money. And they said, Mike, we need your help. Come on out. So the first thing I came out and I noticed that the printer is literally 5 feet away from the router. A network cable, put it in. I reset to make it wired only. We disable the Wi-Fi connection on the printer. And now I can print to it. I give it a static IP address. Here's the problem that I ran into. And I don't get this. How come on an HP install for the driver from scratch, when you want to install all the software, when you put it in, it comes up even though you run setup, it sees that there is a software installed, so it says, well, you're finished. No need to continue. So I'm Googling this, and I'm figuring, how can we get this to reinstall everything from scratch? Because now I know it's going to go better, because we can see this printer. It's printing beautifully from the iPhones because it's AirPrint compliant. So to make a long story short, I had to uninstall each HP component that was installed. I then ran CCleaner, cleaned up the drivers and any kind of legacy registry that was going on there. And once I was able to do that, I was able to put the DVD in and was able to install everything. Once it all installed properly and it found the printer on the wired network, away we go. So that client is very, very happy, and I know she will not spend hours and hours with the next problem. Just call me right away. And it's interesting. This is the client where that Windows 7 laptop, that was the one that was infected a couple weeks ago, and I spent the time and had to create the new profile and fix that. So I understand they spent some money with getting the laptop repaired and wanted to tackle the new printer and thought that that was pretty easy. And it is normally easy. Here's the thing. When you have a printer, make sure it has wired capability and do whatever you can humanly possible to get a network wire to the printer, back to the hub or router, whatever network port you can. Give it a static IP address and you will be very happy. I know there's people out there running and printing successfully to a wireless communication on the printer. I just will not accept that. There's always a problem. What if you change the password on the Wi-Fi? And remember, and this is the confusion, and I hope everybody listening to the show understands that if you have a wired printer, you can be wireless on the network throughout the office or the house, and you can print to it. But we don't want the printer to communicate wirelessly. That's where the typical user does not get. They think they have laptops. They want to print wirelessly. So they think they have to get a network printer that is wireless. And that is the misconception. And that is the problem. And that's why all of these printer problems exist out there. I've never had problems where it's a wired printer right from the start. It's interesting how these things are interpreted by the typical user. And that's why I hope everybody listening, everybody in the sound of my voice, you're hearing this and you're comprehending what it takes to print to a network printer, and you're not going to make the same mistakes. And you'll be able to educate whoever you come into contact with and advise them on buying a printer, making sure there is a wired port on that printer, and now set it up the way I described, and you won't have any issues. So the second printer problem with a client, and this is, I'm finding, more common than not, and you have to have a batch file ready to leave behind on a desktop. And I'm seeing it more at PDF jobs and more in the legal profession, where the PDF jams the queue and print spool of the printer, and now you can't print. And the only way to get rid of it, to empty the queue, is you got to stop the spooler service, you got to delete the files in that very specific directory, and then you start the spooler. There's batch files out there that you can download. I'll make sure I have a good link to this, and I know I've linked it before, but this is exactly what I do to fix a printer problem like that. If someone stopped printing to a printer, you stop the spooler service, you go to the Windows System 32 spooler printers directory, delete everything in that directory, then start the spooler service, and all is well. So rather than doing all that manually, it's nice to have a little batch file that you could put a shortcut to on the desktop for the user, so if they ever run into it again, they will be able to click on it. I have one client that this happens on a weekly basis, so I had to leave that on their desktop. I wish printing was easier. Unfortunately, we just have to build the workarounds to keep it going and to keep moving forward with printers. I have another interesting, I have enough stories for the whole show, but I do want to get to some email. I guess the last story here is Adobe Reader update occurred and a client applied the update and now no longer can properly open a PDF from a very particular vendor site that they work with those files coming right off a reporting system that's all web-based, that they have to use Internet Explorer. And now this one user cannot open those files. So they contacted the tech support for the website, and they said they're aware of the problem, and they have to update their website. Unfortunately, that's not going to be for a while. So the workaround, they give them two workarounds. One, remove the latest version of Adobe, which is Adobe 11, I think, 0.02 Reader. Download Adobe Reader 10, and then install it, and that'll fix up the problem. So last night, I logged onto the system. I uninstalled Adobe Reader 11. Then I installed 10. Figured, well, let's see what happens. So this morning, user came in. They got a little closer. They could get the file now. At least they're seeing the PDF, but they can't open it in Acrobat. So this is another confusing thing. They have Adobe Acrobat and Adobe Reader. Some more tech support today a little bit. And they want me now to, and I'm going to do this on Saturday, she has to save the file and then open Adobe Acrobat and then do a file open and open the file. This is a couple added steps, a good workaround for the next day until I can do the following. I need to uninstall Reader. Keep it totally uninstalled. Just not even install Adobe Reader, which is the free version. Then I will uninstall Adobe Acrobat, then reinstall Adobe Acrobat, but with no updates. And then it's going to only open Acrobat. Unfortunately, I cannot use a third-party PDF reader like Foxit Reader. That would be great. Can't do it. They absolutely have to use Adobe Acrobat, and it is the only program that they can use to edit the PDFs. And they have to use Internet Explorer as the only browser. See, I run into very specific issues. This is also a financial advisor, but it's not with the big firm that I often talk about. But this is my biggest client, where I have the TrueCrypt and whole disk encryption and on all of their hard drives, the YubiKey. This is my biggest retainer client, and there are limitations that I must work with in order for them to be compliant, in order for them to be able to function. They deal with companies that insist upon very specific things in order to work with the files, and you have no choice. So I have to make all of this work. And listen to their tech support. They telling me what to do. My hands are tied. So this is unfortunate. I'll keep you posted and let you know what's happening next week on that particular problem. Before we get to some email here, you've heard me the last few weeks talk about Steve Cherubino's Tech Site Builder 2. If you know anyone that needs a new website for a tech repair business, this is the package you need to be able to put a great, functioning, good-looking, search engine-optimized website for your business. And to do that, how about getting an incredible 40% off? Just go to techsitebuilder.com/MTS. So techsitebuilder.com/MTS. I'll have the link in the show notes. This is from Jason, and I replied actually over a week ago on this. I took over a client that had a large IT company, had been helping, and they installed a brand new Dell server. Nice server. However, I just found out it has two hard drives, and they are not set up in a RAID. That is bad. I would normally do a RAID 1 for a small server like this for mirroring, or I would have put more drives in and perform a RAID 5, at least something. And you're dead on with that, Jason. I agree 100%. I'm assuming since it's a Dell server, it probably has an onboard RAID controller, although I would prefer something a little more robust. So would I. I would like to see caching with a battery backup for the caching if money was available. So the second hard drive is sitting there doing nothing. How would you go about putting this in a RAID 1 and not having to reload and reset up the server? Any ideas? I have Shadow Protect on the server that makes a complete image backup daily. So I thought about buying another hard drive and putting the two hard drives in a RAID 1 and restoring the image to them. This way, I never kill the good hard drive in case something happens. Although, I worry about the RAID driver not being there and booting properly. Any other ideas you have or how would you do this? I told him I love his idea. He nailed it. Buy the other drive. Take that hard drive out. And man, that's it. That's your ultimate backup. You could always just pop that drive in. And since you're using Shadow Protect, that is the ultimate image for the server. Go put the two drives in, set up a hardware RAID 1 mirroring, and then do the restore. Now, he was worried about the driver when he does the restore. When you are booting with the Shadow Protect bootable disk and you're getting ready to do your restore, there is an option for you to be able to stuff and feed drivers before the install. So as long as you have your RAID drivers for the operating system ready in a directory on a USB stick, have that plugged in at the time now you're booting to do your recovery, and you have the opportunity to load those drivers ahead of the restore so you'll have no problem. And if you have difficulty with this, call Shadow Protect support. You own the software, you have support. They have very good tech support. Jason, follow up with me. Let me know how you made out with this. This is from Jack. Very simple response for us, everybody who's looking for the alternative to Google Reader. He says, I've been using Thunderbird to get podcast and RSS feeds. It's also my preferred mail client. Love Thunderbird. That is a great suggestion. You know, I keep forgetting that, you know, email clients work as pretty good RSS readers. I just don't happen to use the Outlook one. You know, that might be something to look at, which is Thunderbird as an option. That's great. Jason follows up with Feedly welcomes 3 million Google Reader refugees with app updates. I'll have that link in the show notes. Now, Kate has followed up with a link to one of her articles when I talked about my Firefox backup restore. She sends a link to her article, column 361, for an easier way to get back your Firefox bookmarks. Kate, thank you very much for that. That will be in the show notes. This is from Michael. How do you handle warranties on computer components? This is a good question. Mike, do you keep track of all the warranty information for customers, or do you give them all the warranty information once you replace a component such as a hard drive? I don't give the customer warranty information on components. I do keep track of that with any purchase that I make, and I don't do this 100% of the time, but I make every effort to tie that purchase to the client, making a note in their records in the folder on my computer. I have a fighting chance of going back and saying, okay, I bought that drive 6 months ago from Amazon for client ABC. That is very hard to do. Now, something a lot easier, I scan the packing slip that comes with all the new Dell hardware. And since I predominantly work with Dell servers, Dell desktops, and Dell components, then it keeps it a little simpler for me. And they have the express service code and the service tag. So one thing I make sure is that those numbers are stored with my client information. So if they have any kind of a hardware problem on the new Dell hardware, that makes it very, very easy. And they either call Dell with my coaching and advice, or if they want me to, I will handle that and I'll call Dell. And it depends if they're a retainer client or not. If they're a retainer client, I'll make the phone call and I will manage that process. If you're not a retainer client, I give them the choice, but that time is billable for me since I'm going to be doing that for making the call. So I'm not 100% accurate on tracking every single component. And you got to remember, that's not as important to me because that's not an everyday occurrence. I'm not normally putting hard drives in or memory in for a client. I run into more and more manufacturer warranties where I'm talking to the manufacturer. It's a little easier. Maybe it's HP or Sony or Lenovo. That's how I handle it. But good question, Michael. And if you are selling any hardware, you have to have a tracking system. Now, mine's manual, but you got to have some type of a database or some type of way, even maybe if it's as simple as an Excel spreadsheet. Or just, if you have access, build a quick little access database with your client info and that tag information or that warranty information. Takes a couple steps, another minute or two, but it's well worth it to track that. This from my friend Norbert, who has been very, very patient. While I was traveling, he sent me many, many emails that I never replied to. So I've been very, very bad. Norbert's been going through a whole bunch of things with selecting online backup, and he's made a couple decisions and a couple things that I want to read his latest email, which is updating me on everything. Mike, I think I have found my best option for backing up the NAS on my router: CloudBerry with Amazon Glacier Services. They give you a nice cost estimate up front, and they have several options on where you actually place the backup files according to the type of services you want. Check out CloudBerry. The nice thing that they have that only a few other online offsite backup services offer is the ability to backup a NAS device without paying an extra cost or upgrading to a business-type backup plan. And since I truly want this as just a backup storage option and not a cloud service, it costs a lot less using Glacier instead of Amazon S3 or the other several storage options. This is the cat's meow, in my opinion, because it does exactly what I'm wanting. I believe the total price for the CloudBerry program is $30, and using Glacier with about 100 gig of data for 1 year is about $30 annually for a first year total of only $60, and probably $30 for the next year or two. As I am uploading 68 gig today to Glacier using the free trial of CloudBerry, and I do intend to purchase the service. I definitely want to follow up on how this is working out and how, now that you are using the service, how do you like it? How response? So to recap what I did, I purchased and connected a Western Digital 2 TB MyBook to my ASUS RT56N Gigabyte router. Purchased and will be installing later this week a TP-Link unmanaged 8-port gigabit switch behind the router and out to all the locations throughout the house. purchased and installed a TP-Link 5-port gigabit switch at my work desk for my personal desktop with gigabit LAN cord and any future devices. Purchased an additional TP-Link 5-port gigabit switch for any future needs. Copied all digital photos and videos stored on my 11-year-old PC. Used our photo storage solution over to the MyBook network storage via the Asus router. Switched my wife's Photoshop Elements 10 program to use the MyBook's photo folder location for storage of photos and video map drive for her simplicity. We'll be setting up backup routines for all home computer requiring document and file backup to the MyBook. No need for a couple of them just used for internet access. They will have images of them made and stored on the MyBook, but not backed up to Glacier. Yeah, that'd be a lot of money backing that up to Glacier. Set up Cloudberry to back up the photos folder and the PC backups folder on a scheduled basis. Can always do it manually as well. Not only is this a valuable lesson for everybody that's hearing this for your house, but I know a lot of small businesses that could benefit from the attention to detail and the specifics that Norbert is going through as he sets this up. I'm out of town, but available via phone or email if you wanted any more information about what I've done. I have compared the cloud backup services, and a lot of them are just reselling the same services as Amazon S3 offers, but putting a different face on it and doing it as a subscription. This way, with Cloudberry, I'm doing it with a one-time purchase program and the Amazon Glacier service annually based on what I'm using. Why pay for the premium item when the generic will do? And Cloudberry does NAS devices at no extra cost where the other services or can't work with a NAS. Thanks for listening to my adventure and hope to hear from you soon, your friend and loyal listener, Norbert. Norbert, thank you so much for your understanding. And here's what I want to know. How is it handling videos in the upload and bigger files? Because one of the things I noticed with a lot of cloud services, especially Carbonite, and I'm going to throw them under the bus here. Carbonite does not back up videos. They throttle the bandwidth to such a small bandwidth, it could take weeks or months to finally get a full backup of what you're trying to back up. So that $55 unlimited for one system, you know, it may not be worth it, given some of the restrictions and some of the things that I've now seen with Carbonite. Mosey Pro, I like that a little better. Norbert, if you can take the time after now using this, after a month or so, I'd like an updated status if you could take the time and let me know how happy you are with this service, because this is really good stuff for everybody that can learn for a reliable, inexpensive cloud backup service. That's what we really need. And something maybe we can be recommending for our smaller clients. This is from D. Hi, Mike. I remember an episode where you talked a bit about you bringing a licensed electrician into one of your projects. Yes, I have a couple that I have access to. I am a one-man networking guy myself and have a potential opportunity, friend of a friend referral, to run some Ethernet and a power circuit in a small 700-square-foot small business office. If after the survey and bid goes through, I plan to get major help from a technician who had a good number of years running cables, at least 5 years ago. I've been doing some research and probably will have some challenges, though doable, in garnering the relevant tools and materials. If and after this experience, I would add such services to my existing computer consulting services. My questions are as follows. Was there an episode that talked much about running cables? I don't remember of one. I got to look back. I think it was what I believed in the right way to do it. And I will try to find which show that was on running cables. And it was because of a client that didn't listen to me. and was not taking my advice. Very funny story on that, real quick. That client's now moving to another office. And guess who is coordinating all of the cabling for that new office? Yes, it's moi. So I am back in the picture, and they are listening. Isn't that something? Did you let your electrician friend deal with your clients directly and thus have him dealt with his rate and payment? Or did you pay him directly? I've had both projects both ways. I have two electricians that I would say at my disposal to be able to use. One, I subcontract, meaning if I bring him in when I can, I bill him out. I know what his material costs are. I know what he wants for an hourly rate. And then I will mark that up appropriately and bill directly to the client. And I am the one responsible. I have another electrician that I let him completely deal directly with my client. And there's reasons for wanting one or the other. But a lot of it's come to basically time and who's available. But I do have multiple electricians at my disposal that are experts in running cable. That is very, very important to have a reliable cable installer that you can trust. So this way, when you go in and do your work, it's going to be a piece of cake. I often guide them by letting them know exactly the way I want things done, and then they just physically do the work and make it happen. I do the design. I lay it out for exactly how they're going to run. Then I say, connect it up. This is where I want the jack. This is where I want the patch panel, and I want all the jacks terminated to. Make it happen. But I am very specific how I want each of those ends, where they are, and how they're connected. I will either try to bring or refer to an electrician or have a client find one themselves. Any thoughts? D, if you want, I'm available, and I have very, very inexpensive, at least I think, consultant-to-consultant rates. If you would like me to go over this process with you, and it will set you up going straight so you'll know exactly what to do for your cabling and what to look for, where to buy all these items at a great price that I bet your electrician doesn't even know about, I can set you on the right path where you can make money and install this correctly. This is from Doug. This is on migrating a large hard drive to a smaller SSD. In a recent show, one of your listeners asked about a program for migrating a large hard drive to a smaller SSD. I researched this a while back and found Paragon Migrate OS to SSD. It is by far the best and easiest tool. I test it and is specifically designed for this purpose. It costs $19.95 and is well worth the money. As an added benefit, it properly aligns partition boundaries to optimize the drive if necessary. Not all cloning and migration tools perform this critical step. It can also migrate 64-bit Windows configured for UEFI-based boot mode, i.e. Windows 8. Here's the link, and this is Paragon Software. I always enjoy listening to the podcast. Keep up the great work, Mike. And this is from Doug in Wake Forest, North Carolina. Thank you very much. This is from Taz in the chat. It's about apps and gadgets. Just a few apps and gadgets that I thought were interesting. First is Prey Project. Prey lets you keep track of your laptop, phone, and tablet whenever stolen or missing, easily and all in one place. It's lightweight, open-source software that gives you full and remote control 24/7. I have it currently installed on my laptop and iPod. I am going to give it a test run by saying that one of them is missing, then the other, and see what happens. I will let you know my results for you and your users and listeners. Second is Liquipel. It's a patent-pending process for super hydrophonic nano coating used to protect electronic devices from damage due to exposure to liquid. It cost about $59 and 3 days turnaround. I have not used it. Someone does, would love a review. Liquipel, LIQUIPEL.com. Last, and this is Swivel, SWIVL, is the first and only iPhone accessory that lets you capture hands-free video following your every move, and with a wireless microphone, your every word. Again, I have not used it. Mike, I thought this might be a good solution to your PAX video podcast. Yeah, it is. So he's going to make a donation if I decide to buy it to be able to get those videos from PAX. So, Mike, that is awesome. And I am going to look into that, man. Thank you very, very much. Final email from Colin. Financial consultants and data security. Hi, Mike. I was very interested to hear the final email from the last show and your recommendations for securing data, in particular for your financial services clients. I have an IT consultancy PC repair business and a financial services business. We use TrueCrypt for encrypting our laptops and backup drives, and BoxCryptor for encrypting our Dropbox files. I like that idea. I would like to hear your advice on email, though. We use regular Gmail accounts for our email, and of course, that is unencrypted. We're in the UK, and it seems to be overlooked that emails are stored unencrypted on servers and visible to employees of the email service provider. What are your requirements and best practices for your U.S. financial services consultants? And what are your views, please? As always, thanks for an interesting, informative, and entertaining podcast. Yours, Colin. Colin, this is a tremendous question, and I only have half an answer. The majority of my financial clients, I am not responsible for their email. The enterprise company that hosts their email, it is encrypted. Every email is encrypted. Every email is journalized and archived. It's scanned. It's looked. The message can't even be sent out without any financial or client information. It is scraped. Every single email coming in and going out. Now, I have one other client that has their that is in the financial services business that has their own server that I maintain. The email is journalized, meaning every message that they send is sent a copy, and that's an encrypted connection to the company that's journalizing their email. But their email is not encrypted. And it's amazing that you asked this question. I was just presented with a very large document from their dealer broker that is specifying the exact terms of encrypting their email that I am now going to have to make them compliant for encrypting their email. It's something that I'm reviewing this weekend, and I'm going to see what it's going to take on their local server based on these very specific requirements from the dealer broker. So you basically have to follow, if there's a dealer broker involved, you must follow their compliance, their rules. Secondary, you got to at least file the FINRA compliance. And then it's just good common sense, but when you're in the financial services industry like this, it's very, very specific. So I'll let you know what I'm going to be going through on encrypting the email, but you can't just leave it out there. Yes, it not only has to be encrypted, but it has to be journalized. And that means a lifetime copy of every single email that you receive and you send. That can get costly for the storage, for that kind of a journalization of the of email. All right. If you purchase from Amazon or know anyone that purchases from Amazon, please continue to use my link. It's Amazon.com www.micnation.net. I want to thank everybody who is currently using that link. It makes a big difference in supporting the Mike Tech Show. I really appreciate it. And thank you so very, very much in supporting the show and supporting the sponsors like Malware Bytes Pro, Fabs Auto Backup for Tech. You know the products that I use and love. Dyn, that's a great DNS service. dyn.com/podcast30. So with that, before I totally wrap up, a couple things. It may be sounding a little different, like I said in the beginning, because of the backup scenario that I'm now using, because the mixer isn't working properly, and I am using a microphone connected to this Icicle device, and right now it's looking pretty good, and I'm able to record the show. But I've also lost my voice last night at the Green Day concert. I had an incredible time. It was by far the best concert that I've ever attended. And unfortunately for the post show tonight, there's not going to be any music, and I had a lot lined up. I had a tremendous time. If you follow me on Facebook, on my last picture, I have a comment where I put a link to the set list. And when you look at the set list, if you're a Green Day fan, you're just going to drool, because they played 28 songs, and not just that, they did some covers: Highway to Hell, Hey Jude, Shout. Take a look at that, the set list. It's unbelievable. Just an incredible concert that Billy Joe put on. And this was the rescheduled one because he was in rehab. So that's it. And I will be back next week. Same time, same channel. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.